We do have a quorum, so I'm going to call the meeting officially to order. And Representative Nash, have you read the minutes of March 16th, and would you be willing to approve them?
I have, and I will move the minutes.
Are there any discussions or corrections? If not, so the motion prevails. I see I've got three up here, so I'm trying to use the ones accordingly. Apparently, they are different sounds, so we'll see how that goes. All right, first bill up today is Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I haven't visited with Ms. Marble about where this bill is being sent, if it should be moved to the floor
We believe it's going to the floor.
All right,
from
that was my hope and understanding, but I just hadn't. I'm actually presenting this with the help and support of Representative Hansen as well. And then if one of the pages can do me a quick favor. Just last night we've got the, and maybe these I'll pass out around this way.
So while they're handing it out, Representative Atkins moves House File 1461 to be re-referred to the General Registry.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I do, and there's an amendment, the A1, that is an author's amendment, that would put the bill in the shape that I'd desire to move forward with it.
Representative Atkins also moves the A1 amendment. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails. So the bill is in the form that you prefer, so please tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, members. On July 30th of last year, and I'm assuming most of the folks on the committee are aware of it, Officer Scott Patrick lost his life. He was killed in the line of duty when he pursued or pulled over a gentleman who's now a gentleman in the city of West St. Paul. And he was shot as he approached that person. I had a chance to know Officer Patrick shortly after I took over that section of Mendota Heights from my friend and colleague, Representative Hansen. I was knocking on doors and got to know Officer Patrick a little bit, and he would never have met a more passionate person who loved his community more. He'd lived in Mendota Heights for a long time and felt very strongly about his community and the people that he protected and served each day. What this bill does, to get to the heart of it, is recognize Officer Patrick along the stretch of road that led from his home where he lived to the place where he died, just across the border into West St. Paul. We've done this in the past. In fact, I believe that Representative Lilly had a bill 2 or 3 years ago that did made a similar remembrance of an officer who lost his life. That's what the bill does. There is what was being passed out, Mr. Chairman, is a resolution from the city of Mendota Heights passed last evening. I won't read that to you, but it sort of lays out the series of events, demonstrates the community's support for the remembrance. Notable is that the highway will continue to be known as, for at least for local folks, and I know for Representative Mason, our constituents, it'll still be known as Dodd Road for legal and addressing purposes. But the remembrance will note that it's Officer Scott Patrick Memorial Highway. I would point out, and I think Mr. Radin or somebody from the department is going to be here. They sometimes have reservations about putting up signage, and I appreciate that. I really do. But there's certain times when it's important to do things like I hope you will join me in supporting today. With that, I'd like to turn it over to my colleague and friend, Representative Hansen.
Welcome, Representative Hansen, and if you'd like to continue with the testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I think the important thing, and I won't read the entire but the family of Officer Patrick has requested that a portion of Trunk Highway 149 in both Mendota Heights and West St. Paul be designated in the memory of Officer Patrick.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. Representative Howell.
And I'm more than anyone here, I understand
that, I believe, because we did something very similar to that out for Officer Decker out on Highway 23. My only question, and I'm just hoping that when you determine the color of background of blue with white lettering, I think our sign out there, and I don't know if this has got to be whether it's a standard or how that's done, but I know I believe ours is brown with white, and I don't know if there's a standard sign that they do when they memorialize a piece of highway. I just would kind of, instead of putting it in statute, maybe direct the highway to use the MnDOT to use the appropriate sign lettering and color that normally gets done. But I'll leave that up. That's just a. I definitely support what you're doing. I just that just comes to mind as I'm looking at the bill. But thank you,
Representative Atkins. Any
yes, jump? And I appreciate that, Mr. Chair, and Representative Howe. I think you're going to hear. I expect that the department may come down and testify to that. What we'd like to do is continue to move it to the floor, and we'll get to. There's a group that is in charge of the memorial or remembrance for Officer Patrick. This is their request on behalf of the family and the family's request. But I think we can continue to discuss exactly how this occurs.
Thank you. Are there people from the audience who would like to come testify either for or with concerns? Thank you. And please state your name for the record and continue on with the testimony.
Mr. Chair and Committee, my name is Sue Groth, and I'm the State Traffic Engineer. And I'd like to thank you for the opportunity just to hear a little bit about MnDOT standards and signing and why we have them the way we do. I also want to just say that the department is fully supportive of memorializing this highway. And we, you know, would offer our condolences to the family. I mean, it's very tragic, and certainly Officer Scott Patrick, you know, should be honored. So but with that, one of my responsibilities is to make sure that signs that are erected along the highway conform to federal and state standards of our Uniform Manual of Traffic Control Devices, and we've talked about that at this committee before. Standards help motorists just recognize the meaning of sign and reduce their perception and reaction time, and so every time a sign is placed on the highway, it's considered a traffic control device. And so we do really want to adhere to those standards as much as we possibly can. There are two aspects of this legislation that don't adhere to the standards. One is the color, and the highway memorial signs in our standards fall under what's called a cultural interest, and so cultural interests are signed brown. And there are fewer brown signs, so I could make the case that actually brown does kind of stick out a little bit from a motorist perspective. But we do have 30 brown memorial signs currently out there that the legislature has designated roads those are on our highways, and they're designated for different military organizations, different law enforcement organizations. But the second issue, the graphic, actually is the one that I'm probably a little more concerned about, because we have had many requests from families, you know, can you put a picture of my loved one, or can you put a badge, or can you put the logo of the department, and those types of things. And graphics of any kind when you're on the highway, we try to minimize those as much as possible, because we don't want, again, that just increases the perception and reaction time of drivers, especially if it's hard to see or read. So those are why we have not allowed those in the past. And the manual specifically says we shall not do it. So if we do pass this law, we will be in direct violation of that. One of the things I'd like to offer, and that we, because we've run into this problem before, so something that we've done in the past, which I think works very nice, is that we can create more of a personalized sign that in the colors and with the graphics that that the family would like, that they could use have for their own purposes, but just not use that sign out on the highway. On the highway, you actually have the standard sign, but then we could create a separate sign that would have a graphic say the memorial name and even change the color. We did that for a state trooper, I believe, last year that wanted the maroon versus the gold. So we created a separate maroon sign that, you know, again, we couldn't use state monies to do that, but they were able to purchase it. And it was a nice way, you know, for the family then to have that personal with exactly how they'd like it. So that's a compromise that we've talked about in the past and could be considered in this case. So is there any questions?
First of all, Representative, is there any kind of compromise, do you think, or are we set with the way the bill is at this point?
In fact, Mr. Chairman, I was going to assure Ms. Groth and the department that we'll continue that that discussion. I appreciate Representative Howes. This was their desire. I wanted to make sure that we accurately represented what their desire was. But these are good folks, and I'm sure they don't want to decrease people's reaction time or cause accidents. We'll make sure that we do it in an appropriate fashion.
Thank you. Representative Nash.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Atkins, and to the testifier, and to the family, first, thanks for carrying this bill. It's important that we do this for the men and women who every day prepare to go and defend us, and some ultimately, unfortunately, do give their lives in the line of duty. And I appreciate you basically answered my question, but I wanted to make sure that the family and you knew that I'm fully supportive of this and appreciate your willingness to work within the guidelines that we can to make sure that this is something that's appropriate but still dignifies and honors the officer.
Thank you. Any other questions of the committee at this point? Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to speak for or with concerns on this particular bill? Seeing none, then I believe Representative Atkins renews his motion to re-refer this to the General Registry. All in favor?
As amended.
As amendment. You are correct. As amendment. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you. Thank you, Representative Atkins, for bringing that to us. Next bill is Representative Lilly's bill, House File 1772. And I believe you have a few testifiers as well.
Nice job. It's very tough.
I'm going to grab one lunch. With that, Representative Lilly, I will move House File 1772 to be re-referred to the General Registry. Representative Lilly, to your bill.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, and committee members. Thank you very much for having us here today. And it's with mixed feelings, of course, that we're here, but quite honored to be here for Officer Bergeron. It's coming up on almost 5 years ago. On May 1st of 2010, Officer Bergeron, on a quiet Saturday morning, was patrolling, and there was a carjacking in the East Metro, and Officer Bergeron responded to that, and two of the folks got him while he was still in the car and gunned him down, murdered him. In the line of doing his job, and on a quiet Saturday morning. With me today, I have a few folks. There's a few more in the crowd, but I have Mrs. Bergeron here with me. And just to be clear, right away from the beginning, this is not really driven by the family. This is kind of driven by the community that wants to say thank you, that wants to respect the service that Officer Bergeron gave to the community. Most officers are not like us, you know, that want to be public or anything of the sort, or, you know, even later you'll hear from the chief, but, you know, these are the last things that they want to be public on, of course. But so it's just a minor token of thanks that the city of Maplewood has asked for to say thank you to the Bergeron family and to perhaps help with a little bit with the healing for our area. So with me today I have Mrs. Bergeron, and then I'm going to pass to and I also have my co-authors here, Representative Ward and Representative Fisher, and of course on the Senate side we have the local authors, but I don't know if you know the next person that I'm going to introduce is the new mayor from Maplewood, a former member, my senior member. But Representative Slavik, please.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Nora Slavik. I'm the mayor of Maplewood. And I thank you for the opportunity to be here today. You know, I really want to thank Rep. Lilly for authoring this bill to designate part of Highway 36, the Sergeant Joseph Bergeron Memorial Highway. 5 years ago, on May 1st, the city of Maplewood suffered a great loss in the senseless and brutal murder of Sergeant Joe Bergeron. Sergeant Bergeron was shot and killed while attempting to question two men in connection with an earlier carjacking incident, as Representative Lilly mentioned. You know, I vividly remember Rep. Lilly calling me that morning. We were seatmates. You all know how that is. He was 55A, I was 55B. You don't usually get a call on Saturday morning, right, especially during session. And so knew something was very serious. I was at Transfiguration Church with my daughter. We were at a CPR class. And he told me that a Maplewood cop had been shot and that it was Sergeant Bergeron. The feeling was one of disbelief and then shock, and that turned into deep sadness. As a city, we still grieve the loss, and we want to honor not only Joe's sacrifice, but the sacrifice of his coworkers, his friends, and most importantly, his family. Sergeant Bergeron had served at the Maplewood Police Department for 26 years. He is survived by his wife, Gail, and his twin daughters, Sam, who is not here today, but Allie is here, and then her friend Megan is also is here. So we appreciate you all being here. At the funeral service that was held at the Cathedral of St. Paul, Mike Duzan, who was a nephew of Joe's and also a police officer, said, "My Uncle Joe's death doesn't make him a hero. His life makes him a hero." House File 1772, which names part of Highway 36 the Sergeant Joseph Bergeron Memorial Highway, will place a sign that will serve as an important visual reminder for our community so that we will not forget Joe's sacrifice. Last year, I think it was last year, right, Leon, for North St. Paul, the legislature passed a bill naming part of Highway 36 after Officer Richard Crittenden from North St. Paul. Representative Lilly also carried this bill, and he knows what a powerful reminder this sign is for our community, as several pass by it many times a week. Well, it is a great burden for it to bear of having two police officers in our area murdered. It is extremely important that Sergeant Bergeron from Maplewood is remembered, and I ask you to support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. And does Mrs. Bergeron wish to testify as well?
Mr. Chair,
Representative Dillon.
She's here as support, prefer not to at this time. But I've also, if the committee's okay, I'd like the chief to say a few words. And Chief Schnell, please.
Welcome to the committee, Chief, and please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Paul Schnell. I'm the Chief of Police for the City of Maplewood. My comments will be very brief. Upon the death of Sergeant Bergeron, the City of Maplewood and its police department committed that we would never forget the life and sacrifice Joel and his family made. These incidents have a profound effect on police agencies and our communities, but no one paid and continues to pay a greater price than the Bergeron family. Today I speak on behalf of the Maplewood Police Department, past and present, asking your support of House File 1772, designating this portion of Highway 36 running through Maplewood the Sergeant Joseph Bergeron Memorial Highway. The action called for in this bill serves as an active reminder to Gail and her two daughters, and the members of our police department, the Maplewood community, and Minnesotans or travelers driving that portion of the roadway that Joel Bergeron and his sacrifice will not be forgotten. I thank you for your thoughtful consideration of this bill.
Thank you. And before we get to questions, on behalf of the committee, I do want to offer our condolences to the Bergeron family for the great service and sacrifice that you endured. And so please take that with you as well. Representative Nash.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Ms. Bergeron and Representatives Lilly, Ward, and Fisher, I wanted to renew my support, as I did for Representative Adkins' bill. This is good. And I wish that we didn't have to, but I'm glad that we will, and know that I've got my support.
Any other questions from the committee? Are there any testifiers in the audience who would like to speak for this bill or with concerns? With that, I'll let Representative Lilly have final words.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and thank you for doing this for our community. It means a lot. Thank you.
Thank you. And with that, I renew my motion that this bill be referred to the General Registry. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you for all your attendance and for being here. Do you want to go, Danny or Linda?
table next to you?
I think we're going to go slightly out of order, and Denny McNamara next.
Yep.
And then Linda will do yours next. Representative Rudbeck. So, Representative McNamara, you have 1594, and you have some testifiers as well. And I'm
Mr. Chair, I got 1598, and I actually have an oral amendment in written form for the committee just to be aware of.
Do you have a page? Is that ready for distribution,
yeah.
Representative?
Sure. Well, after the other
one. Right. Yeah, right.
The right here.
It's written on the. We'll wait for that to be distributed. In the meantime, would you like to explain the general premise of your bill, and then we'll get to the amendment?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 1598, and I believe it's going to civil law.
That is correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a bill that deals with the challenge we have of illegal mowing that's going on our highway right-of-ways and road right-of-ways. I worked with, you're getting an amendment that has a couple of oral changes I'd like to make put the bill in the shape I'd like.
We're just about ready for that amendment.
And if members get it, what it deals with currently, and I was surprised to find out that, and Mr. Chair, if I can also let you know that the thoughts are it'll go to civil law, and then civil law would send it back to this committee with the possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. So it needs to go to civil law, and that's kind of the gist of the bill. It'll go to civil law because currently there is no penalty for illegally mowing our roadsides outside the time that the current law allows, which is basically you're not supposed to mow road ditches before August 1st. And that's for habitat purposes is what it's about. And members, if...
So, Representative, let's deal with your oral amendment. Let's have you explain exactly. I think everybody has a copy of that.
I will do that, Mr. Chair, and I'll walk through it. First of all, it would allow... And I've changed. I met with MnDOT this morning and apologize. We were not able to. Mr. Burris was not available. But it would change from what had stated as the first 8 feet. It would allow up to the first 15 feet adjacent to the roadway to be mowed any time, and that's for safety purposes, members. So if a deer is standing on the shoulder, if out the first 15 feet wide is mowed, you'll see the deer standing on the shoulder. And some might say, well, how much grass, how tall it's going to be? Well, the reality, a fawn deer in June or July jumping out could be hidden in that year's growth of grass. And I know the fawn's not going to win, but natural reaction sometimes is to swerve. And so that's why that's there. And then the next change deals with what would be allowed. There are times when you need to mow year-round for safety reasons like sight distance, interchanges, stuff like that. We want to allow that. And then also MnDOT brought up the thought that there's some research projects where they're testing different alternatives to mow. For instance, maybe down on I-90, we don't need to wait till August 1st. Maybe we should see about mowing in July and what is the effects on wildlife if we did something like that. Or there's another research project testing different mowing heights and such. So that we want to allow for research. And then also I've inserted end construction because sometimes in a construction project we'll have a 3-year maintenance period. And when you're reestablishing prairie, oftentimes you'll need to mow it 2 or 3 times the first season after, and naturally you'll have to do that before August 1st. And then we've just eliminated what height. We used to pick different heights, 12-inch, 8-inch, and the reality is I think we need to let people mowing grass decide what height. And so that is taken out, and that has the support of MnDOT and DNR to understand that maybe guys mowing grass should be able to determine what height to mow. Mr. Chair, that's if it's okay, and if for some reason folks... Oh, and then the last thing is, in the oral amendment is on 2.18, that we remove the first sentence, licensed peace officers may enforce this section. Representative Cornish said his committee, if we remove that first sentence, doesn't need to see the bill. And the reality is, if you read the rest of the bill, the local road authorities, peace officers have the authority already, so we didn't need to state that. Even though it really doesn't mean anything, it would have meant the committee. It just eliminates a committee stop. Mr. Chair, that's, and if there's members, and if they think it's too complicated to do it as an oral amendment, I can wait until it comes back. But I think for the most part, it makes the bill less controversial and probably has more bipartisan support if I do incorporate the amendment.
With that, Chair McNamara moves an oral amendment as stated. Are there any questions? He went through it, but if there are any questions, we'll make sure that you understand what the amendment is. Seeing none, then all in favor of the oral amendment, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails, and you have your bill in the form in which I believe you wish.
Well, and Mr. Chair, I think what it would be good is I think both MnDOT and DNR would be good to testify for the bill. They both, I've been working with both, and it's not in the point yet of being a governor's initiative, but the reality is, for those that the governor's pheasant summit's been talked a lot about around buffers, but one of the things that did come out of the governor's summit was to crack down on illegal mowing. And so, interestingly, where it's not a governor's initiative, I think it is a governor's initiative. So,
well, if we could have the testifiers come down from the department, that'd be great. And welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Good afternoon. My name is Bob Welsh. I'm the Habitat Program Manager with the Section of Wildlife in the Department of Natural Resources.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name, too.
My name is Tina Markison. I'm with the Roadside Vegetation Management Unit in the Office of Environmental Stewardship for MnDOT.
Welcome, and please continue on with your testimony.
Okay, I guess I'll start. We've been working on this for a while, and in cooperation with Tina Shop and others as well. And we're at a position where we can basically feel like we can support this bill. It adds a couple of the key elements that that us at the Department of Natural Resources feel is critical. One in subdivision A. Where it's adding any persons. That was a big issue with the Department of Natural Resources, that this really only applied to road authorities, and anyone else could mow. And in township road situations where ownership is the center of the road, and those are most of the miles of roads in the state, they were getting mowed pretty heavily at the wrong times. Don't get us wrong, we understand that mowing is an important tool. We use mowing to manage our own grasslands. It can be a valuable tool in managing grass. It's just that it can be very destructive to wildlife when it's done at the wrong time. So we're very supportive of this as it reads now. We would like to see, is now the time to suggest? There's one additional addition that we would like to see in subdivision G. Under roadsides adjacent to state wildlife management areas, our counterparts in the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, who manage waterfowl production areas and national wildlife refuges, have the same issue: illegal haying and mowing adjacent to their properties. And we would like to insert language there to include the federal lands. I'm not sure how to do that.
If it's admissible to you guys, maybe you could do that before at civil law and before it came back here, or is it, if that's okay?
I think, Mr. Chair, that would be best. I would want to get the language just right. I don't know if it just needs to say U.S. Fish and Wildlife, but I'd get that right when we come back here, I think.
All right.
Would be the
Thank
time.
Thank you. So the author and you can continue working
on
that.
We'll work with Representative McNamara on that. And with that, I'll turn it over to Dina.
Chairman Kelly and members, I'd just like to thank say thank you to Representative McNamara for working with MnDOT on this bill. It definitely addresses some changes to some or changes to challenges that we've been facing in the past. So, with the amendments that have been made, MnDOT would support this bill.
Thank you, and I think we do have a few questions. Representative Nash.
Mr. Chair, thank you. To the author or possibly someone who can testify, I'm confused by the fiscal note on this. Can you help me shed some light on that? Because a biennial cost of $624,000 seems high.
Representative McNamara.
Mr. Chair and Representative Nash, I actually saw the fiscal note at the exact same time you did. And look forward to coming back when the bill comes back to the committee to actually show zero fiscal costs or actually, I think there's significant savings to be in the bill if we would get proper mowing done, that we would have more haying done on our highways that would actually save MnDOT money. I don't think we're properly utilizing that. So I'd rather say I will not support the bill if it has a fiscal cost of anything beyond negligible, and I think that I can't support using trunk highway fund money to allow haying on the highway. Okay. So if we can't get it down to what is reasonable, I won't be back here.
Mr. Chair, follow-up?
Representative Nash.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I understand that MnDOT is in the room with us, and I would love to know how this generates $624,000 of biennial new cost. Would they be willing to come and testify?
Representative Nash, they are the table.
Great.
And Representative Nash, I look forward to the challenge of sitting down with them and working this out. If you want them to try and say how they think this is realistic,
love that.
We could have that discussion, but I will give you a different opinion.
Representative Nash?
Mr. Chair, I think that would be illuminating for us to figure out how we get that much money and if they are prepared to share with us or other members of MnDOT are here. And that's what I was referring.
Mr. Chair, I think you better have a heavier hitter from MnDOT in regards to the fiscal note.
Is there anyone else from the...
Sorry, I didn't mean to offend anybody with
from
that.
From MnDOT, Mr. Peterson, maybe, who might be willing to take a crack at it, at least. Welcome, Mr. Peterson. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Scott Peterson from MnDOT. And my understanding is that the fiscal note refers to issuing the permits and enforcing the permitting process. I don't know to what extent Representative McNamara's bill is triggering the additional work, because under current law they're required to get permits. But we've had a real hard time enforcing the mowing restrictions, as Representative McNamara pointed out. And with this bill, there's more opportunity for us to enforce the mowing restrictions. And so I think what they're anticipating with this bill is just like we'll be investing more time in the permitting process and managing the mowing of the roads.
If I could just interject a follow-up, do you think it had to do with the fact that it stated on the back page that police officers would enforce it? If that may have been, and now that that's been restricted, that may change as well?
Mr. Chair, I don't think there's any direct relationship between the activity of police officers and MnDOT activity.
Representative McNamara.
Well, Mr. Chair, I look forward to the discussion. The one interesting thing in it is, if you'll notice, we now have in there that folks that steal hay on the highways, which is a very common practice. Unfortunately, all the haying you see going on before August 1st on our highways has been, for the most part, illegal and done quite widespread because there are no penalties in current law. Well, now if you steal $10,000 worth of hay and take it home, you're going to get a call from MnDOT that you need to cut us a check for the 10 grand worth of hay, or I would imagine they would allow it to somebody else is going to get the hay worth 10 grand and send a check to MnDOT. But I would argue that I think the revenue, which it shows zero, folks, so I look forward to the discussion. And as again, I think there's opportunities, and there's no labor savings in here. Currently, MnDOT has abandoned the policy of mowing anything on I-90. there's opportunities to spend, save way beyond the cost of this bill if we were to develop an alternative haying practice on I-90 again this summer. For decades, there was mowing on I-90, and today many farmers have the proper equipment with the lights and such to be able to mow properly on I-90. We would save MnDOT lots of money, and so Representative Nash, I look forward to the discussion with MnDOT between, and you're welcome to sit in. I might need somebody with your talents.
Is that sufficient, Representative Nash? We'll get that information when it comes back.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Representative McNamara, I'd be happy to sit down with you, and not to hijack them, but I did notice that Mr. Lee and Mr. Burris came in. Perhaps they were brought up to speed prior to the delivery of this fiscal note. Maybe they, no? No. Well, Mr. Chair, let's move on.
I appreciate that very much.
Yeah, let's move on because this confuses me, and I'd like some more answers, and I'm sure Representative McNamara will help me understand that.
It's not the first time we've had confusion over fiscal notes. I do have a couple other testifiers on the agenda. Is Tom Peterson and Abby Breidick here as well? Are they going to be testifying? Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Tom Peterson. I represent the Minnesota Farmers Union, and we have supported the current law as it's been going, but as Chair McNamara has been saying, it's not enforced. And so we have some concerns with just how the bill would work. We're interested in the permission, permits. In general, right now, what I think is interesting and confusing about this bill, as I talked to our members and said, Chair McNamara has a bill out here about ditch mowing, it gathered a lot of, I didn't realize so many people bailed ditches. But as we've talked about this issue, and over the years, by the way, the DNR's had a group called Roadsides for Habitat that didn't meet for a while and then started meeting again this year, which is good, and talks about that. We've talked about this issue with our members, and I noticed when I go, I remember driving on Highway 2 last summer from Crookston over to Bemidji, and it was all bailed in June. I'm thinking to myself, well, who watches that, or who's, if it's illegal, nobody's enforcing it. And so I've been watching this and been seeing it. We've been visiting with our members. And I think a lot of times, too, it depends on the price of hay. The price right now, for example, I bought hay last week for $2 a bale, but last year at this time, for just a small square bale, but last year at this time it was 10, or 2 years ago at this time it was $10 a bale. And so you did see a lot of people going out, especially if you see a price. It's also important to remember right now in Minnesota, we have the second lowest hay stock, that we've had in the last 50 years in Minnesota. So a lot of times that drives people out to look for, hay and what goes on. The other thing I thought that was interesting, so I just asked our farmers that were out there, I said, did you know you're not supposed to be out there till August 1st? And they said, yeah, but they don't, they don't pay any attention. And the state trooper, he waves at me when I'm out there. And they have even told us that MnDOT or local authority will ask them to come mow it before August 1st. And so I'm just very concerned about the nuts and bolts of this, that if we're going to get aggressive and do misdemeanors and fines that, depending on the price, could be substantial to the farmers, that we let them know that we're doing this. That I think MnDOT, local governments and everything says, hey, we're going to get aggressive on this. Even though we haven't been doing it since I've been with Farmers Union, 15 years, 13 years, but now we're going to start writing you a ticket and giving you a misdemeanor for baling the hay that you've been baling, and we've been driving by and kind of looking the other way. And so that's one of my concerns. So we'd be interested in, trying to work as a farm organization to continue to educate our members and with the Department of Agriculture and MnDOT to, let our farmers know what exactly is going to happen and then how to get the permits, where to get the permits, and, will be an important. Let me just see. I think that covers most of my comments. So, again, I think, this is just punching up what I think is the current law, but I am concerned about, a lot of the guys I know, too, that go out to bale hay, they're not, this is an extra income. This is, maybe that's their son or the younger people out baling hay in the ditch. It's not a huge money-making experience for them. I'm not saying that it's right or anything. I'm just saying I just want to be respectful that, again, that, you know, it's something we haven't been enforcing. All of a sudden we're going to enforce it, and they're going to get hit with a misdemeanor and a possible fine. So if there's ways to work on that, I want to keep working with the author to make sure we have some comfort in that. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Peterson, and I have full trust that if this does get passed into law, that you'll be a very good advocate for getting the information out. Before we get to additional questions, let's go to the final testifier, Ms. Breidach. Please state your name for the record.
Yes, thank you. My name is Abby Breidach. I work for the Association of Minnesota Counties, and I just have a couple comments. We certainly don't oppose the concept of this bill, and several of the changes that were made in the oral amendment make this a lot more, or not that it isn't palatable, but allayed some of our concerns. But there are a couple things I did want to point out in section L of the bill, which gives the road authority they're in the position to give a value to the vegetation taken. We're not sure if the local road authority is the right person to do this. It may, I briefly discussed with Representative McNamara, it might be something easy to check, you know, if it's, hey, costs online, but we're not confident about having that responsibility. And then just another point about just being sure, we found that Section B, which allows for the shoulder to be mowed at any time, might be in conflict with Section H. I think it would be more helpful if it were clear that Section B that gives the right to mow at any time trumps the private landowner and public owners to request that they are not mowed for the purpose. And maybe that's just our interpretation, but we thought we'd feel safer if it were more clear that at the end of the day it could be mowed at any time for safety reasons, etc.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. I think we will get to the questions. Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to whoever would like to answer this. This is obviously not something I have in my district a whole lot. And I think Mr. Peterson answered part of the question, but if we're not enforcing it, does that mean we don't know who is doing the mowing? And if it is the people that live on the property, I can see where that could be a substantial problem going forward. So,
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Mason, ditch mowing is yeah. really an interesting thing, because you can mow, and I don't know how I explain it, but it doesn't have to be necessarily in front of your property. We get complaints a lot of time that people just go down and mow the ditches, and then other people will come and take the hay. And so it is really an interesting, you know, piece. I'm trying to remember what. I'm sorry, could you restate your question? Because I'm not sure.
I guess
Representative Mason.
First of all, I want to know, do the people in the area normally know who's doing the mowing? And if what I think I'm understanding, if it's the people that actually live on the property, then I can see where you have some major issues mm-hmm. prohibiting them from doing
Mr.
that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mason, a couple things. Sometimes, yes, currently we do know who's actually doing the haying. And the reality is, as Mr. Peterson has said, we're talking about a little bit of a shift here in folks' mentality about the ditches. We need to remember the current law says that you can't mow road sides before August 1st. But because there is no penalty for doing that, and what we need to realize, members, and for those of you in ag backgrounds, hay is generally much better on the 1st of June than the 1st of August. So if you want better hay, you're going to mow it on June 1st. Your hope is it's going to rain some more, and you'll mow it again probably on August 1st. And you get two crops of hay, and they're of more value than the one on August. That doesn't take into account the ground nesting birds and such that do better with better habitat. And the quality of some roadside grasses will not be very good if it's mowed early in the season. So those are some of the issues. So, yes, sometimes we do know who's actually mowing it. And in response to that, I think the first thing will be an educational shift that people need to realize this is we want the law to be followed. And that, I think, will be the most important. And sometimes it is just folks mowing the front of their own lawn, which they can do. That's allowed under law, and we clarify they can do that at whatever height they want to do that. Mr. Peterson made an interesting point, which can happen. Somebody has a wide enough lawn, and they don't mow it very regularly, but they go out and mow it, and there's a fair amount of grass sitting on there. A neighbor will come by and windrow it quick and bale it up because it's on the public right-of-way. That can lead to conflicts, too. So that this is something that we need to work on, but I think it's a good work in progress. I don't know, Mr. Peterson, if you wanted to add to
that. The only thing I'd add on this is I've you know, and emailed and talked to MnDOT is I've asked, like, who enforces it now? You know, and that's not real clear to me. But it's also the other question I had is because there's not an enactment date that I assume it would just go into first on July 1st, and then just how that would work this year. That's something we could work on. But I think his comments were good.
Representative McNamara.
Two points I want to make. To Mr. Peterson's point, and MnDOT brought it up, we need to talk about the enactment. I think it might be important that this year just be clearly we wouldn't want any penalties this season. I think it would be more voluntary this season that we would let people know, you know, we have it in law. The penalties, I think, would need to not take effect for a year, or we would delay the total implementation, and it would just be an educational thing this season. One other thing, Ms. Bredick mentioned the value of the vegetation to be determined by the road authority. We're working with MnDOT, where it says that in law currently. There are some publications out there that maybe utilize other states, use a publication to use a value of hay. The reason we wanted to leave it up to the local authority, which could reference a document out there, is, as Mr. Peterson noted, the value of hay fluctuates greatly. I don't want to put something in statute that goes way too high or way too low, and I'd rather the locals... I'm trying to make it simple, but allow them the flexibility. I don't want them to be facing their neighbor and ripping them off. Or another neighbor says, you gave that guy all that hay, and he only had to pay $1,000, and it was worth $10,000. So that's the challenge we have. And I'm looking forward to working with these interest groups, MnDOT and DNR, to see if we can find some legislation that works. I know it's not the highest priority in transportation, but it's one that's been a pet peeve of mine.
Thank you. Representative Mason?
Yeah. Thank you. That answers my question.
Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My concerns are addressed by the author as far as implementation of this. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thanks for bringing up this bill, Representative McNamara. Mr. Peterson, I've actually talked about this. I've talked about this issue with a lot of people, including my MnDOT district manager, my county road guy, and that sort of thing. A couple of comments, a couple of questions. One is it's interestingly, the last time I talked to the district manager, Mr. Chair, was after I drove through Waseca and noticed that the Highway 14, the middle of the road, had been hayed. And it was in July, and I thought, what's going on here? And my district manager explained he didn't know who had done it and didn't really have a way to know that, and so the confusion reigns. I also want to articulate that good friends of mine who are very good beekeepers really consider this an important issue for them, that they argue that the August 1st date gives them the flowers that they need, that their bees need, and that's a very appropriate date. So it's not only for the birds and the birds that are living there, but you know, and the animals, but it also helps with the bees, and it's very important to them. I think, though, another comment I think that it merits consideration is that Governor Dayton actually lifted the ban on haying a couple of years ago during a drought, I believe. And so my question for the author is: Would the governor still? I assume the governor would still have the opportunity to lift the ban.
Representative McNamara?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, The governor has emergency authority for haying, and Representative Johnson, I'm not positive it extends to roadways. It could easily. It actually extends to wildlife management areas, but most of the time that emergency haying is done after August 1st, so I think it wouldn't apply here. It's applying to public lands that aren't open to haying under normal conditions, and then they're allowed to be hayed. But does DNR know, isn't that emergency haying after August 1st normally, or I don't know if it ever happens before August 1st.
I think we're phoning a friend here, so.
Do I need to restate my name?
Okay.
Representative McNamara is correct that when it was implemented, it was implemented consistent with those restrictions of after August 1st. And in our case, when we entertained the governor's request to open lands, they can't just be open because lands are acquired and using different funds. In the case of wildlife management areas, that have federal aid support in their management, we don't have the luxury of just being able to just open them up. And so the areas that were made available for emergency haying were done with very specific resource management objectives in mind.
Thank you. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My last question, I was going to direct it to Mr. Peterson, but maybe it's just as much a comment as anything. This does obviously requires a culture change. I looked around. Most of you folks live in the suburbs of the city. This is a bigger issue than would normally be recognized. This is no small issue, and it's complicated. And I thought you were very apt in talking about there is a culture change that needs to be had here. And so, as you're looking at adjusting the bill, I would ask that you kind of look at an easing in over time. It's not maybe just this summer. It might take a couple of summers. But again, I like to see things done well, and I think this can be done well if it's eased in over time, and there's kind of alongside. I don't know if we have to fund it or whatever, some kind of a public information campaign, and think that through how that can be done well, so that 3 years down the road. It's kind of accepted. Let's build acceptance for this that lowers the need for enforcement and creates less problem in the culturally and socially in the countryside. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Norton.
This is dangerous, me weighing in on anything having to do with ag, but I'm going to ask a question here. As I'm looking at the language you're removing on 1.16 about the height, and I'm sure nobody wants to be out there with a ruler, picking on whether it's 8, 9, or 12 inches. But I do wonder about if hay is a valuable resource and it's cut down to the ground, if there's more value in it, if you would be, if not having some minimum in there, you wouldn't be risking some of the wildlife that you're trying to protect based on Part A. And so I'm asking, I really don't know.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Norton. That is actually a really good question, and what I came with on that was I think we're best to let the road authority in the permit. They probably will pick a height. I think where they can, they'll probably pick a height somewhere around 6-8 inches, probably their hope would be, but then they may issue a permit under special conditions to control maybe an invasive weed that's a little lower, so they may allow for a lower height. But you are right, a number of native grasses are best not mowed below 8 inches if possible.
Representative Norton?
I've exhausted what I know about this issue, but I just was concerned and wondered if there was concern for it. It sounds like we'll trust the department.
All right, thank you. Are there any other questions from the committee that I missed?
Mr. Chair, I took the luxury to craft that oral amendment with the departments and not with Mr. Burris, who was unavailable. So as you can imagine, he needs to weigh in now. So I would defer to him to adjust my oral amendment orally.
Yeah. We will be glad to do that. Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, without the benefit of the discussion around the amendment, it looked to me like the change that's being made to add research and construction to issue additional reasons for when additional areas could be mowed, that you might want to use an or there so that safety, research, or construction, any of those would be reasons rather than all three being requirements that would have to be met to permit the mowing. And then a second thought is, in a copy that I have on 2.18, there's a paragraph numbering, so it's paragraph L, and I would recommend keeping that paragraph L there and just deleting the substantive sentence starting at licensed.
I think Representative McNamara's pencil just happened to go over that L inadvertently, right?
Mr. Chair, I would like to move Mr. Burris's oral amendment, changing the and on line 1.15 to or, and to delete the pencil mark through the L on 2.1. It's now ink mark, 2.18. Is that right, Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, yes.
Okay.
Okay, the motion has been made for an oral amendment to do just what he said. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? A motion has prevailed, so again, we have one more amendment. Are there any other testifiers in the audience? I wish you talked about that. With not before the final approval, Representative McNamara, do you have any final comments?
I look to coming back with a bill that will be in better support and not have such a big fiscal note.
Thank you. And so with that, Representative McNamara renews his motion to refer the amended file 1594 to civil law. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, members.
Thank you. Representative Renbeck, I think you are up next. This is House File 631. Representative Renbeck, would you like to move your bill?
Certainly. I'll move House File 631. I don't know if it's going to the floor or...
It'll be laid over, possible inclusion.
Okay. And members, I do have the bill. Deals with the Department of Vehicle Services. It's all about making our government a little more easily navigated, user-friendly, and so on. I do have a couple folks from the DVS area. If you have questions, I don't know if they want to come down, but they're up there. So, but the bill started with a call from my constituent who said that duplicate tabs had been issued on her automobile. And the first set was issued when she purchased them herself in early July. Then she decided to sell the car at the end of July. The dealer said that he would buy the tabs from her, but when she brought the tabs to the dealer, he said somebody else had already purchased another set of tabs. And they called DVS, who said, well, that should be no problem. We should be able to get a refund. The constituent went to a deputy registrar or some office of DVS and expected to get the refund. And by the way, the tabs were on the original form that they had been mailed. And the office said, well, they could not issue that refund there, that there was a form she'd have to fill out and mail it in. She went home, did that, mailed in the form, and a month later received a letter saying that the refund could not be issued because it had been received too late, and that it would have had to have been requested before August 1st. So there's really no time frame in which, if you were, for some odd reason, and there's probably a variety of reasons why you would want or need a refund. So what this does is extend sort of the grace period through to the 10th of the month after the first of the month when they're supposed to be on the car, so that if you have a reason and need a refund, you're able to get that refund. So that's basically what it does.
For clarification purposes, the refund was available for the month of issuance. You're just extending it for the 10 days after that. Is that in a nutshell?
Right, and I believe that puts that deadline in sync with another date that the department relies on. I believe it's the 10th of the month that the tabs have to be on the plate, but perhaps someone could clarify that from the department. Is that correct?
Are there any other testifiers that would like to come down and testify? Thank you, and welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Thomas Henderson. I'm the program director for Driver and Vehicle Services,
Okay. Thank
you. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Pat McCormick, DVS director.
Please continue, or supply us with your knowledge, shall we say.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representatives, stickers and plates are supposed to be displayed on vehicles within the first 10 days of the registration period.
Okay, first 10 days, and does that, when if they're due in November, for example, then they're supposed to be displayed by the 10th of November?
The registration, Mr. Chairman, members, the registration period will begin November 1st. They have to be displayed by November 10th.
Okay, so when somebody has a thing that says that they are due in November, they don't have till the end of the month to purchase the sticker?
Mr. Chair, members, correct. The registration period would end the last day of the month. So if the plate said November, the registration period would end the last day of November.
And then they would have 10 days after that to get them displayed?
Mr. Chairman, members, no. They have to pay their registration tax prior to the last day of the month, because the next registration period begins the first day of the next month. So they would have had to pay the registration tax by the November 30th date, but they have until there's a grace period of 10 days to display those stickers.
And that's what I was referring to, because it sounded like you said they had the whole month to pay for them, but they had to be on by the 10th of that month that they paid in, which indicates they would be paying for it after they were supposed to have it displayed, which didn't make sense. So,
Mr. Chairman, members, that is correct.
All right. Ms. McCormick, did you have a follow-up comments?
Mr. Chair, no. We're just here to respond to questions the committee members may have.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any questions from the committee? Representative Koznick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, I appreciate what you're trying to do, Representative Runbeck. Could you talk a little bit about your thoughts on the fiscal note, because I have concerns on that part. And I do recognize trying to do the right thing here, but right. That's where my concern is.
Representative Rendon.
And I just saw this fiscal note, $32,000 annually. I guess I would look at it as that it's an expense, but it is the taxpayers' money. And if a refund is legitimate and due, then it, you know, it's belongs to them and not in the Highway User Trust Fund.
Representative Koznick.
That's all for now. Thanks.
That does have me ask a question. So the only reason why there'd be fiscal note is that there would be some people that have applied that don't qualify. So do you know, as a ballpark figure, how many of those applications have been denied because of this 10-day window that would have been now in place?
Mr. Chair, members, we're estimating about 100 additional refunds would be issued every month.
100 every month?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions of the committee? Representative Bernardi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Since it was kind of as clear as mud what you had explained, I kind of got two different answers, but I think I understand what was said at the end. I just have a question for you. If someone doesn't get it, do it by the end of the month when it's due on November, here to using November, so it's due in November, they don't do it by the end of November, what is the penalty if they do it December 1st, 2nd, or whatever? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Please.
Mr. Chair, members, there is no penalty if you register late.
Representative Bernardi?
That's it. Thanks.
Any other questions of the committee? Jeff, Representative Howell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I understood the example that Representative Runbeck gave, but I'm struggling to figure out 100 a month needing refunds. I am struggling that 100 people a month miss that opportunity to refund and they do it after that period, how many refunds do we do a month? I mean, I just struggle with that number of 100 extra folks needing refunds in that 10 days after the month.
Representative Rembeck or Ms. McCormick or either one?
Mr. Chair, members, we do about 480 refund applications every month.
Representative Hall.
So that's the extra 10 days. You're doing the math and figuring an extra 10 days, you'll get it, and that won't wow. I guess I didn't realize there was that many folks that either smashed up their car or traded in their vehicle that often and bought tabs and never put them on. That boggles my mind, but that's what the number is, I guess.
Ms. McCormick.
Mr. Chair, I think Mr. Henderson wants to provide a more explanation so that the committee understands what we're saying.
Okay, Mr. Henderson.
Mr. Chair, members, we receive 480 applications total a month. About two-thirds of those applications are for refund requests, of which those two-thirds, which is about 317 a month, we're estimating about 33% of those would fall within this new grace period, which is about 100 a month.
Representative Hall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm not going to belabor the point, but I would say how many applications are rejected for being after the deadline? I guess that would be the number that I would think are the ones we're going to talk about. I don't think there's going to be that many. So how many does the department reject for being after the 30-day notice?
Mr. Henderson?
Mr. Chair, members, we don't have that data right now.
Representative Hall? Right. Thank you. Any other questions from the committee? It does seem like it's clear as mud, right?
I'm in the mud puddle.
All right. All right. Any other questions? All right. Any other testifiers from the audience that would like to testify on behalf or with concerns on this bill? If not, Representative Rinbeck, do you have the final word?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've just put ourselves in the place of a constituent who is coming within a day or two of the date that it has to be on the car and finding that they can't get a refund. So, and if you have a very very rational reason, the fact that there are duplicates issued, that's an even another greater cause. So I urge your support.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Hearing no other questions and concerns on this bill, Representative Rinbeck renews her motion to lay this over for possible inclusion.
Thank you.
We had one more bill, but Representative Drazkowski is in another committee with another bill, and so at this point we're just going to lay it over for another meeting at this particular time. A couple announcements. The next meeting is our regular Monday meeting next week, the 23rd on Monday, and then we'll also having a late meeting that night as
yeah.
well. And it looks like we will have more bills to hear that evening as well. And at 4:30 or after the session, 15 minutes after the session, whichever comes later. So any questions about that? With that, this meeting is adjourned.